I'd like to welcome you to our August the 2nd Board of Supervisors meeting, and would you please stand, say the pledge, and hold it aside.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands for my nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Do we have a motion to adopt the agenda, or are there any changes?
No changes, Madam Chair, so moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Ms. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Eager, that we adopt the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
And Chair votes aye. We're going to do A, resolution of accommodation and appreciation for Paige Demar, Zach Butler, and Savannah Peterson.
You want me to bring up the resolution, and you want to read it first?
Yes.
And then we can get every, the board can take action and get them in front? Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I'm going to read the resolution, and then we will have a motion, and then we will have our students to come to the front. Resolutions of accommodation and appreciation for Paige Demar, Zach Butler, and Savannah Peterson. Whereas on Thursday, July the 6th, 2023, on duty Lake Monticello lifeguards Paige Demar, Zach Butler, and Savannah Peterson put their training into action, rescuing a motorist experiencing a medical emergency. And whereas Paige Demar witnessed a car crash through the pool fence, proceed across the pool deck and through the other side of the fence, continued down the hill and across Beach One before coming to rest in the lake. And whereas Paige Demar, having alerted Savannah Peterson and Zach Butler, the lifeguards, then gathered their gear and ran to the beach, finding the car rapidly filling with water. And whereas Zach Butler removed the driver from the submerging vehicle, Savannah Peterson and others helped the driver out of the water and onto the signboard. And whereas this joint life-saving actions taken by this team of lifeguards, assisted by Lake Monticello maintenance staff Josh Huntington and Travis Perry, as well as Lake Monticello residents Mark Post and Carrie Lambert, resulted in a successful and happy outcome. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize the extent our heartfelt gratitude to Paige Demar, Zach Butler, and Savannah Peterson for their quick thinking and selfless actions. The board also thanks the Lake Monticello staff and residents who assisted and called 911 and the quick response of emergency services. It is no understatement to proclaim that it was these combined efforts that saved the life of the driver. The foregoing resolution was duly and regularly adopted by the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors of Fluvanna County on the second day of August, 2023. You have heard the resolution. Would someone please make a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a resolution entitled
resolution of commendation and appreciation for Paige Tamaras, Zach Butler, and Savannah Peterson.
Second. We have a motion by Mr. Butler and a second by Mrs.
And Mr. O'Brien.
Mr.
Butler's over there.
Oh, Mr. O'Brien, Mr. Butler.
He doesn't have quite as much gray hair.
Yeah. Okay, my first mistake for the evening. I'm
having more. Ma'am, we all will make up.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. O'Brien and second by Mrs. Speaker. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. Now we would like for the students to come forward and parents to, yes. If it's parents.
Sorry, Zach, you got a shrink, can't be told.
First thought was I have to get my hoodie off because I had a hoodie on.
I need to get
water.
We gotta clean it a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we might put Jackson.
Yeah.
All right. Let's put your bed. You can get right behind Mom.
Yeah.
There we go. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks. I'll get the back here.
Okay. Here, I'll stand up using the back.
Now, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think we are. Because my volume is down at 47, but that's not my.
Baseball, ran track, and cross country.
Okay. All right. Now we are with the county administrator's report, Mr. Eric.
Top that one, buddy.
Top that one.
I don't know what's going on here.
They all work at the office.
We got another hiccup going?
Yes. I hope that's not the. You know what? So I've got a couple things to report. Got a lot of employees to report on here. Welcome the new EMT BLS employees to the team. So everyone's first day was July 10th, 2023. So Heather Spence, Jonathan Hallquist, Evelyn Pinkney, Christopher Vest, Gracie Clifton, Hunter Ames, Virginia Davis, Melanie Johnson, Noah Robertson. I think there's been a few other additions. I think since that point, six other additions. Okay, so we have six other additions that we're trying to add in here, but they haven't been in for onboarding or anything yet. So we're moving full steam ahead.
I hate to ask this question. Two of them just graduated?
Jim. Jim.
from the high school?
There's a couple.
One.
Yeah.
Gracie.
Yeah.
They came from our high school, right?
She came
from the program. Yeah, someone asked me, told me that there were two students out of the work. Yep. Oh, that's great.
Yep. And then also, we got a few new employees for the Public Works Facilities Department. Josh Redmond started for the Assistant Equipment and Fleet Maintenance Technician. That was a new position that the board approved. Actually, it was in the previous budget year. And then Ashton Hudson, he's a recent graduate as well. He began work with the as a ground maintenance worker one. And so Josh Redmond started July 17th. Ashton Hudson started July 31st. And then one more, Maya Seelock. She started with Social Services for the as the Human Services Assistant 3. And she started August 1. So I certainly want to welcome all those employees and stuff to the to the Levanna County staff. And then want to give a special recognition this morning to Ms. Booker. So I went to the Levanna County Public Schools convocation, and she was presented with the Fluco Legacy Award this morning for her work, all of her work as a board member, and just in addition to that, work in the schools for all those years. So congratulations to Ms. Booker for your Legacy Award for Levanna County Public Schools. And then certainly I would be remiss if I didn't add that the Levanna County Fair is coming up. It's going to be held August 17th through the 19th. On the 17th and 18th, it'll be 5 p.m. opening time, and August 19th, it will be a 10 a.m. opening time. So there are a lot of good things going on this year, lots of attractions. As always, the carnival's there, live entertainment. Monster truck rides are going to be done on Thursdays and Fridays. They have the Axe Women of Maine daily shows. So basically, you know, log cutting contest. I think they do some, I think I heard that they do some rolling in logs in the water and stuff. So again, so that should be kind of interesting and fun for all to see. Daily petting zoos, kids zone, beer garden on Friday and Saturday. There's going to be an axe throwing area on Saturday. We got one of the vendors that come out that have the tents for axe, the trailers with surrounding areas for axe throwing. So there'll be a lot of things for all to do. There's going to be over 60 non-food vendors and 15 food vendors there. And certainly a special thank you to all the sponsors of the county fair. Again, with them, that wouldn't be possible, but the online book, fair book is online, and like I said, lots of fun things happening, and hopefully the public gets out to it. And then, so we got some good things coming along. The construction, the lights at the Pleasant Grove Athletic Fields, they began on July 17th. The completion of the project and everything is pending this week. Basically, the lights are all up. All they're kind of doing is finalizing some of the electric and stuff. So if you go by there and you can see from the picture below, all the lights are standing tall in the air right now, and we're just finalizing getting the electric hooked up for it. So again, that was a CIP project that the board approved.
So they're up there and down the softball field?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They should be. Yeah. I think all the lights are up. The only thing that's left to be done are the electric panels right now. And then some upcoming meetings. We have a meeting August 16th in here, the Carriersburg Performing Arts Center at 7 p.m. Wednesday, September 6th at 5 p.m. in the Performing Arts Center, and then September 20th at 7 p.m. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board has.
Any questions? If not, then we will go to our first public comments. Anyone who would like to speak to the board, would you come forward and give us your name and address and speak to the board? Not seeing anyone, I will close the first public comment.
Anybody want? Just 1 second here.
She hasn't said. She's.
Nobody's coming off
mute. Sorry, the technical difficulties are in rare form tonight.
All right. Action matters. B, fiscal year 23, BOS contingency budget transfer. county attorney budget.
Yep, I'll take this one. Dan's coming into it late in the game, so I don't want to think, I don't want the public to think that Dan overspent his budget, only starting.
He was only here 3 weeks.
Yeah, he was only here 3 weeks into the fiscal year, so. So again, the fiscal year 23 county attorney budget was over expended by $91,000 through fiscal year 23. And I can definitely tell you, you know, a big, kind of the two big main drivers of that was certainly procurement. So one, you know, we had an increased number of contracts and agreements in fiscal year 23. Two, we had, you know, the purchasing officer that we had in the position for a while wasn't as experienced as the previous one, so there was a lot additional oversight from the contract county attorney's office to assist with a lot of the contracts that were coming through. And then in addition, we had a vacancy in that position when that individual was no longer in that position for about 3 months. So because of that gap in some of the vacancy and just the inexperience, we had to kind of lean on the county attorney's office a lot heavier to make sure the contracts and everything were kind of getting pushed through. And unfortunately, just from that, it's certainly more expensive than a staff on board at the time. We do have a new purchasing officer hired. Actually, they start this coming Monday. And so they've got lots of experience, and like I said, and with Mr. Witten on board and things like that, you know, certainly that will streamline a lot of the processes with that. So procurement was probably the biggest piece of that. The budget report was in there. I think what we had estimated, we were probably about $60,000 over budget in that realm. Now, I will say, on the flip side of that, in the finance budget, because there was vacancy savings from the position being vacant, there was also vacancies and salary savings in that budget as well. And then also under kind of what we call a special category through the county attorney's budget, we also had some big ordinance changes in this past year. One, some major ordinance changes, with two big ones being the Chapter 21 Water and Sewage Disposal Ordinance, and then the Chapter 8 Fire Protection and Public Safety Ordinance for the Savannah County Department of Emergency Services. So those were kind of big ordinances and big rewrites that needed to be done. So those were the main drivers for being over expended fiscal year 23. Again, so we're requesting a $91,625 transfer from the BOS contingency. The BOS contingency did have $92,006.96 at the end of the year. So that would clear out basically both budgets, and they would be kind of an offset. So like I said, and just as reference, as we start moving forward, you know, there's a little overlap too with Mr. Payne kind of being on for a little bit, and from an employee standpoint, we also hired Mr. Witten, so Mr. Witten came on. So we're hoping this next fiscal year that will kind of levelize the budget out a little bit, especially once Mr. Witten and he gets all his staff on board too, and we start to kind of transition to in-house. But the fiscal year 24 budget that the board approved for the county attorney is $341,722. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board has regarding this.
Any questions? Okay, and we have a motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $91,625 from the FY23 BOS contingency budget to the FY23 county attorney budget for legal services.
Okay, let me hear a second. Second, okay. We have the motion by Mr. Wright, second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. Next, we have the budget calendar. Do we usually get it this soon?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, the board usually adopts the budget calendar, but we, you know, we're getting ready to crank up here, so.
Evening, Madam Chair, members of the board.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you? So for FY25, the biggest change this year is it is not a reassessment year. However, on the calendar that you have in front of you, there are a few things highlighted in red. We do not have the information for the school's budget stuff yet. I believe that should be coming out later this week. And on the 14th, I believe it shows February 14th, we can have a work session that night if the board would like to, or Mr. Dahl and I discussed if you wanted moving it to February 28th with the agency presentations. So that is one thing I would need direction from the board on. And work sessions that started at 7 p.m. last year, the board had discussed maybe starting those a little bit earlier, so that's something I would need direction on.
Yeah, so those are two things. One, we want to make sure we're not cramping into anyone's Valentine plans on February 14th, but again, that's just one.
I will let you know that is my wife's birthday. You killed her.
Hey, I'm giving you an option. 14th's
not good. That's love day.
So this.
Go on.
I'm not going to be here, but I'm helping you all out.
So this year we would need to set the max advertising rate on March 20th. We would have our public hearing on April 10th. And we could adopt on April 17th or hold a special meeting on April 24th.
So just a couple decision points. And again, so one, do you want to have the constitutional? Because generally on that work session, it's just the constitutional officers come and kind of discuss their budget requests. Again, we could potentially combine them with the county agency briefs on February 28th, which is also just another budget work session day. But again, that's one decision point for the board. And then the second one is on all the work session dates, you know, it previously we did 7 p.m., but there was some discussion. Do we want to start the work sessions at 5 p.m.?
On non-board meeting days.
I mean, it's for me personally, it's hard to come by 5 because I've got a regular work day to go to Charlottesville, so. 6 is great, but 5 is, you know, tough.
I'm all for doing it earlier, as early as people can comfortably get there. It's just, to me, it's trying to cram so much in, and it's often just not enough.
Yeah, I believe 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or whenever's the best time to start as early as possible, especially on those nights. Those nights can a little long.
So I think I hear that on non-budget days for work sessions, we'll start those at 6 p.m. Is that the consensus?
Yeah, so we were doing 7, right?
We were doing 7.
You don't feel like you can make it frequently by 5, so 6.
Yeah, just makes it harder.
Yeah.
So 6 or 5:30 is doable.
Do you think 5:30 is doable?
Okay. Let's do that.
Let's do 5:30.
Okay.
As early as possible on those days.
And then on February 14th, mix it up, combine it on the 28th, or leave February 14th there?
There's a high probability I will not be in town that day.
I'm good either way.
Okay, so.
We'll probably have a really full schedule to cram that we're trying to cram it into the 28th, but.
Yeah, usually on that night, county agency briefs would be, fire and rescue would kind of, you know, discuss their budget. It would be a cooperative library. Extension, library, registrar, and
that's when we used to have a really nice meal. So food is that important.
So I think instead of having 5 presentations, we would just have potentially 10 presentations that night.
So you're going to keep February the 14th?
No, I think, again, I don't want to speak on behalf of the board. I think I heard don't do it on the 14th right. And put them all on the 28th.
I'm good either way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Y'all okay with that?
Well, if you won't be
here. I'm probably not going to be here.
Yeah, let's just go into the 28th.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
All right. And those are really the only thing, again, like Ms. Melton said, you know, it's a non-reassessment year, so we don't have to advertise that budget. Max advertising budget early. So again, we just have to put out a proposed FY25 budget and calendar year 24 tax rate on March 20th. So that's kind of the big things. And like I said, we'll once we get some more direction from the schools, we'll kind of plug those dates in accordingly for when they're going to do it.
Have we ever gotten any? Is that what you're talking about? The final numbers from the school for last year's budget?
No, this is just the.
This is when they have their actual work session, when the schools have their work session, and then when the school board actually adopts their budget, and that also has some bearing on when they come to us.
Except the only reason I say that is because we left during our tax season in limbo because the state just said, "Well, we're just not going to tell you what we're going to do."
they're still in limbo too.
Yes.
Okay, you don't have it.
Maybe we'll just be in limbo.
See what happens.
Who needs a budget?
Yeah. Technically, we do. So, okay, so Ms. Melton's got those changes, and like I said, so there's just a motion there, and then I guess we can say as presented with the suggested changes.
Okay.
We have a motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the FY 25 budget calendar as presented with the changes so made.
All right.
Do
we have a second?
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Mrs. Sharon, second by Ms. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. The next on the agenda is resolution of support for Line of Duty Act.
Yep. So again, this has been kind of coming around. So Nelson County, again, it's a resolution honoring Officer Mark Christopher Wagner II and requesting an amendment of the Line of Duty Act. And then also, Chief Wells with the Lake Monticello PD is here too, and provided some input into the resolution. So again, Nelson County specifically was seeking support from Virginia localities and that of the General Assembly, enacting legislation that will amend the state code to provide private police officers Line of Duty Act benefits. And again, you know, as you all are aware, Wintergreen police officer Mark Christopher Chris Wagner II lost his life in the line of duty on June 16, 2023. Again, the officers of Wintergreen Police Department, being a private police department, that they're not afforded the benefits under the Line of Duty Act. And what that does, it basically provides benefits for those families that are that are left with loved ones being lost, and provide some benefits for the families from those losses. You know, speaking a little bit with Chief Wells, you know, one, private police departments, they are responsible for the prevention and detection of crime and the enforcement of the penal laws, and are exposed to the same risk of injury or death in protecting citizens and visitors. And so one, there are many such private police departments within our state that deserve these benefits, including the Lake Monticello Police Department. So the Virginia Line of Duty Act, LODA, was established in 1972. And again, as we said, it provides benefits for eligible employees and volunteers killed in the line of duty, and those eligible employees and volunteers disabled in the line of duty, and their eligible family members. So funding of LODA benefits is provided by employers in one of two ways. One, through participation in the Line of Duty Death and Health Benefits Trust Fund administered through VRS, or self-funding by the employer through an insurance program. And so you want to make any comments? I mean, you know, we made, so in the resolution, we made a couple tweaks, because after we put it in the package, there was a few things that Chief Wells with Lake Monticello wanted to add in there. I keep wanting to call him Captain. Chief Wells wanted to add. I know that's it. He's Captain.
He was Major.
Yeah. That's what I went out as. Thank y'all for your time. I appreciate your efforts. Actually, Mr. Dahl summed it up fairly well. Like I said, there are 8 private police departments in the Commonwealth. We're one of those 8. I just want to highlight, we undergo the same training, are responsible for the same training standards. We have to follow all the same laws as the municipal police department, but because we're a private entity police department, we don't get any state benefits. We don't get any state funding, any federal funding, any local funding. We're not asking for funding. We're just asking for the chance to join into the fund. So if our officers get killed, they're afforded the same privileges. There's a lot of other issues in the code where it's kind of not clear, because a lot of the code language references to police officers of a locality or a municipality or city, county, or town, which technically we are not. So last year, we actually went before the General Assembly to try to clarify some of that language, working with Dana Shred of the Virginia Association of Chiefs of Police. That unfortunately failed, so we're going to try again this year. That's one reason we're asking for these resolutions, just to try to get some recognition as a legitimate police department. Like I said, we're grandfathered in. It would literally take an act of General Assembly to create a new one. So it's just nothing that somebody can just come up with. You know, we serve, Lake Monticello alone serves 12,000 people. That's about half the county population. And I did speak with Ms. Strand of the Association of Chiefs of Police. The proposed draft legislation is not requesting any funding from state or local county governments. It's merely giving us the opportunity for our employer to opt into the fund where we would pay the fund balance to be covered under that. So we're not asking for any funds again, so it has no financial impact. And now we have to answer any questions you have.
Quick question. Do y'all ever go into Sycamore? You don't go across the road from Elwood? Where?
So we request their services, sir, that we do. We ask. So sometimes if county deputies are out and they're closer because they're right within the lake, we ask them to come out. So
that was the only reason I said that you would put Fort Union, because that's a Fort Union district.
Yeah. You know, three of the districts are Lake Monticello, and Fort Union is just about that far away.
Well, Columbia is that far away.
Yeah. So as it stands right now, we have an MOU with the sheriff's office for certain exigent purposes. If they ask for our help, we'll go. That's one thing we're trying to clarify in the code section, exactly what can we agree with the sheriff as far as joint jurisdiction. Like, if we're on Lake Monticello Road going from the gated to the ungated and behind a drunk driver, can we stop them? Can we not stop them? What, you know, so we're trying to clarify that in some of the language as well to make sure we can provide the best services. But it's not uncommon, like today, there's a disabled vehicle on South Boston Road, which technically isn't the lake. All the counties are tied up on the other end of the county. Me and one of my officers went over there and helped get the guy out of the road to clear up traffic before rush hour. So we have a really good working relationship. I think the sheriff's department supports us and supports this resolution.
Well, I say that on behalf of Sheriff Hess and the entire sheriff's office, we do support this. And they train with Lake Monticello Police, train with us. We're side by side. If an active shooter event happens, let's say at the high school, we're going to be calling them to come help us. So if him and I are going through the door, I get shot, I get benefits, he doesn't. We need to fix that. They wear the badge, they carry the gun, they do the things.
And the executive, the Chiefs Association supports this legislation.
They do. They're actually drafting legislation and are working with their politicians, for lack of a better term. I think they have a couple senators on board. The Sheriff's Association so far supports it, or at least doesn't object to it. It's not stepping anybody's toes, and we're not asking for any money. And it would strictly be an option where our, for Lake Monticello, for my instance, would pay into the fund so we get the benefits. So we're not asking. Certainly, we'd love the county to pay for that, but we're not asking to.
So why did you said it failed last year?
We didn't try LOTA last year. We just tried to clarify some language because I think some wording issues, and some folks really don't understand the difference between private police and special conservators of the peace. Mm-hmm. So there was one of the delegates brought up, you know, you mean Amazon could go start a police department? And I didn't have it. We weren't able to provide responses like, no, they can't. It's literally we're grandfathered in under the old DCJS statute. And the General Assembly would have to approve any new private police department. So it's kind of, we're kind of a unique beast, and it just doesn't affect that many people, so it's not a real high priority legislative thing. Now, the draft legislation would also include private campus police, such as Bridgewater. So there's eight of us, and I think there's six private campuses that would all be included in the LOTA legislation.
I assume you'd be a campus police, they're state employees.
They're state employees, yeah. You look like Bridgewater, Hampton Sydney, Liberty University. Some of those are private colleges, so they're not eligible either. And same way, like assault and battery on a police officer, we're not covered under that because of the wording in the code is different. So again, him and I are the same thing. He gets punched, it's a felony, I get fined. Shit, simple assault. So we're just trying to clarify some of those discrepancies just in the verbiage.
Well, I'll try not to punch either one of you.
I prefer you did. Any other questions I can clear up or answer for you?
And again, just in the resolution, again, the resolution on the screen is a little different than was in the package, not by much. One, I think a little bit with the discussion of private police. Two, there is a whereas, more, which wasn't in the resolution in the package, after getting some feedback from Chief Wells, you know, regarding the Lake Monticello Police Department, you know, and it's this section right there mostly, and there's some other verbiage changes a little bit, but again, mostly consistent with what was in the package. So, happy to answer any questions. And again, we spoke to our insurance carrier too about this, and you know, they certainly weren't against it. You know, if there was a push to try and get localities to pay for it, you know, and make it a requirement, that would be one thing, but just allowing private employers the opportunity to be in it, like I said, there certainly wasn't any pushback from them.
If we have, would phone calls help?
It will when the time comes, yes, sir. With the change in districts, you know, we're not sure who our new representatives are going to be, so we're going to be on
the
short.
We know who the old ones are.
Yeah. we're going to be on a short fuse. Rob Bell was helping us out last time. Of course, he's not going again.
That's okay. Lee Ware and Mark Peter.
Yeah. So, yeah, anything will definitely help us once we get to that draft. And I'll be happy to send y'all copies once we get some draft legislation drawn up.
And again, Nelson County has kind of pushed this forward. There's been a lot of other localities that have basically approved a resolution very similar to this already. I know Augusta did. I think Albemarle County did, I believe.
Yeah.
What's that?
I think Bridgewater.
Yeah.
Probably Rockingham. Yeah. Probably those localities with communities in
them. Are we going to read this, or?
If the board wanted to, I can read it.
I just have one more question. So
yes,
what would be the argument against it?
I don't know. The argument when we tried to get added to the assault and battery and law enforcement was it could have financial impact because offenders could get increased jail time, and they didn't want to pay for the extra jail time to make it a felony to assault us. So I'm not lying. It died in the finance committee. And then the last, like I said, this last one was just, I think they thought it was an expansion of police authority and police powers. They didn't understand it. It's kind of already there. This one is, I think it's just not a vessel for a private entity to play, because VRS manages this fund, and there's no precedent for private entities paying into a VRS fund.
Right.
So I think that's where it came about. I don't know the whole history behind it, but for what I can glean, that's it.
Okay.
And I'm sure there would be some extra administrative costs for the Commonwealth by having to take funding from a private entity that maybe they just didn't want to deal with.
It's only 14. It can't be with so much cost.
Yeah.
And Bridgewater probably has 6 police officers.
Yeah.
That many.
It's not a lot.
Officers that were killed.
Yeah.
The largest private employer, I believe, is Carilion Hospital. That's private police departments that service our hospitals.
Yeah. I think it's always good to read the resolution. You want to read it, Mike?
I'll read it. The resolution honoring Officer Mark Christopher Wagner II. And requesting legislative amendment of the Line of Duty Act. Whereas Officer Mark Christopher Wagner II served the Wintergreen community as a private police officer, as recognized by the Commonwealth of Virginia, and while responding to a disturbance call in his capacity as a law enforcement officer, was shot and killed in the line of duty on June 16, 2023. And whereas by definition under the Code of Virginia, private police officers are law enforcement officers subject to the same training and statutory standards as a deputy sheriff or police officer of any city, county, or town in the Commonwealth. And whereas, the Line of Duty Act Code, Virginia Code 9.1-400, excludes private police officers from the benefits of that act. And whereas private police officers, just as their counterparts employed by the police department or sheriff's office, which is a part of or administered by the Commonwealth or any political subdivision thereof, are responsible for the prevention and detection of crime and the enforcement of penal laws, and are exposed to the same risk in injury or death. And whereas the Lake Monticello Police Department, which is also one of 8 private police departments recognized by the Commonwealth, serves approximately 12,000 residents located within the Ravenna, Palmyra, and Cunningham districts of Fluvanna County. And whereas it is the sense of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors that the Line of Duty Act should be amended to afford private police officers the benefits available under the Act. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors hereby honors Officer Mark Christopher Wagner II. Of the Wintergreen Police Department for his heroism and honorable service to the citizens of Wintergreen and Nelson County, for whom he made the ultimate sacrifice. And be it further resolved, the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors hereby calls upon the General Assembly to amend the Code of Virginia to afford private police officers the benefits available under Virginia Code 9.1-400, Line of Duty Act, and be it finally resolved, the Board hereby directs that a copy of this resolution requesting these state code amendments be delivered forthwith to representatives in the General Assembly. The foregoing resolution was duly and regularly adopted by the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors of Fluvanna County on the second day of August, 2023. And I would like to make that.
Yes.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the resolution entitled Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors Resolution Honoring Officer Mark Christopher Wagner and requesting amendment of the Line of Duty Act.
Okay. All right, we have a motion by Mr. Sheridan and a second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, chair votes aye. Thank you.
Thank you all, appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, we have the Primary Village Streetscape Project, VDOT Transportation Alternative Program Grant Update.
So I'll just give a little history. So again, the Transportation Alternatives Program, TAP, is intended to help grant fund community-based projects such as sidewalks and enhance the transportation experience by both the cultural and historic aspects of the locality's transportation infrastructure. So this grant would provide funding to construct concrete sidewalks and related concrete curbing along Stone Jail Street, remove Court Square Road that bisects the lawn area between Civil War Park and the historic courthouse, provide properly marked and much needed angled and parallel parking spaces along the new proposed one-way road system, and to further improve the Palmyra Village VDOT roads. So this is just, again, just a quick depiction, a conceptual layout of what it is. Again, you know, here's 15 right here. Here's Main Street. Here's the historic courthouse. Here's Civil War Park right there. So what it does, it creates kind of a one-way in into there. Pretty much makes from this point on, makes this street being a one-way street, which would have parallel parking in the street and then some angled parking. It would basically connect the historic courthouse and Civil War Park with more of a, instead of kind of that odd street area, would provide more of an extended lawn area kind of throughout that area. Would also provide some sidewalks, some crossings, some parallel parking along that area as well. So that was the project. And again, this is just kind of showing, you know, again, you'd have sidewalks kind of going right along this area right here. They'd have to remove some of that existing cracked concrete wall that's there around the park. Same thing. This is on the north side of Civil War Park.
And
the grass would be basically kind of right here, connecting this grass going up towards the historic courthouse. And so again, the Palmyra Village Streetscape Project is one of the board's current BOS goals. On September 1, 2021, the board authorized and approved submission of the grant. The county received notification on September 2nd, 2022, of being awarded the grant and what the amount was. On October 19th, 2022, the board did approve appropriation of its 20% match for the grant, which that 20% match of the project cost at the time was going to be $317,831. So that's what the board approved, and now we're here today. Like many projects, things have increased, and VDOT's pretty much going around and making sure that localities are still interested. They didn't want to surprise a locality, get down and say, hey, oops, well, the project, you said you're going to do a 20% match, but now the costs have increased. And so before they start moving forward with things, they just want to make sure, and they want to reaffirm that localities are still interested. So just kind of showing what that 20% match does, it basically increases our contribution from $317,831 to $436,000. And I will tell you what they did. You can see the preliminary engineering hasn't really increased. The right-of-way has increased a little bit. We are hoping, too, that right-of-way cost may go down a little bit, because in some of the cost, it shows right-of-way acquisition. Well, the whole parcel where all this work is being done on is on county property, so I don't think we're necessarily going to pay ourselves to have to pay to do something. So I think there'll be some savings from that standpoint. Again, they're looking at it as just any project. They just show what the right-of-way cost potentially could be. And then the construction piece, as you can see, is the one that kind of really went up the most. So really what they're doing is they took some of their original costs for construction, because construction is the area that's kind of gone up the most from labor and really from concrete, and concrete prices have gone up a lot. So they took some of those original costs. They're like, okay, well, what are they today? And then they factored them up a little bit too, potentially, just to make sure. Now, this would be, speaking with Scott Thornton and the rest of the VDOT staff, this would be kind of worst case scenario. They are hoping that this 2.18 is a high figure and it would go down from there. But at the same time, they need to just make sure that if it does come up to that the locality is interested in, is accepting and reaffirming and confirming they want to do that. So again, it would be $118,169 increase for the project. Again, this is kind of everything that the project would include, you know, preparation of roadway plans, drainage plans, signage, markings, public involvement activities, environmental studies, acquisition, bid proposal, administration, advertisement, you know, the oversight of construction engineering service, and construction closeout of the project. So really kind of where we are is, in order for the county to move forward, the county must approve an additional $118,169 as the 20% match of the estimated cost of $2.1 million. And again, that money is spent over a four-year period of time. And then there's a resolution that was in the package. It's basically the resolution that the board approved before, but instead of affirming, it's a resolution reaffirming the commitment to fund the locality share.
Where did this initiative come from?
So it really kind of came forward from just, you know, I think from the community kind of having a better traffic flow there. I know there's been some things that have come from citizens, you know, once the county's out there, to have kind of more of a marketable or usable area in that space of the Palmyra Village, and help to retain the businesses that are there a little bit. And again, the board put it on one of their BOS goals, kind of their what was called the strategic plan before is now their BOS goals. The board approved that to be in there.
I think that's also a follow-up to the Fork Union streetscape too, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the Fork Union streetscape, and then there was discussion about doing a kind of a Palmyra streetscape in that area to kind of, you know, fix it up and make it more walkable from a historical standpoint and historic tourism and businesses in the area.
Well, you know, another one of the things was it's such a hazard around that park. If you go on the Miss Williams' side of the park, there's a 3-foot ditch. It's got a metal grate on it. Sometimes moves around.
No, I will say, just to be clear.
Is that gone now?
No, just be clear. This doesn't, let me go back to the piece here. Yeah, I mean, so that would, this is not for this whole area. There would have to be a phase two to this. This doesn't get rid of the metal benches and stuff.
Get rid of them, I'm sorry.
No, this is just kind of what you're seeing there, removing the asphalt in that middle area, creating more of a lawn throughout the whole area, angled parking, some sidewalks going from the courthouse down, and some, I guess, a little more structured street parking and street flow in the area.
Do you think you'll have an equal number of parking spaces, because they're parked right now, the people can park up around the courthouse and where they're putting the grass?
Yeah, I mean, really, you are probably losing, well, let me say this,
I'm them here.
Yeah, I don't think you're necessarily losing, because you're gaining parking spaces over here in this area. And again, what you may be losing right there, you kind of have, it's kind of flip-flopping there. So I don't think you're necessarily losing spaces. You're probably gaining, you're gaining a few spaces, but it provides some more structure to the street flow. And sometimes too, you know, just due to the fact that it's kind of such a hodgepodge in that area, cars kind of park all over the place in there, and there's no kind of structure from, you know, if there's any larger vehicles that come through that area. And I remember too, you know, I think this started a little bit too at from some project, you know, because there's also discussion of I think fire and rescue apparatus and school buses and stuff going through there, and it can be a little difficult to maneuver in there right now depending on how people park, because there's no structure there.
But you would lose the parking along the jailhouse side of the park. That is a question. Is that correct? Yeah, through all that area there.
Right here, well, yes, you would lose some parking right in this area, because again, that's some of the area. It's a little bit of a bottleneck right in there, and you necessarily can't get appropriate sized vehicles. So you may lose a little bit there, but what you're losing right there, you're going to be gaining in this area right here, because right now there's no parking in this area right there. So from this stretch right here, it's probably about a wash. And from this area right here, what you're losing right here, it's probably about an offset in the angle parking that you're gonna gain right there. So it's probably comparable in the amount of parking. It's just a little better flow and structure. And again, you know, VDOT came out and they walked the whole area and looked at what was a best flow for that.
And if they park where you're talking about, Chris, along that wall, mm-hmm. then it's a one-lane road. Now, it's still used as a two-lane road, but it's a one-lane road.
Right. But so you still have the parking along Main Street?
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. They'll still be parking on, like, it would be
one side.
Yeah, one-sided parking on Main Street.
And now people park on both sides, and it's kind of a one-way street.
Yes, ma'am.
You give each other...
It's
you have to pull over and wait for that car to go. Yeah.
Can you do the same thing with the flow by just putting up one-way signs? So if you didn't do any of this right here, leave all that the same, and you just, this is a one-way, and you can either go that way or you can go this way by the church. This is by the church, right in the treasurer's office.
Yeah, right up here.
Yeah, you go, you could do the same thing if you had one-way signs, because I think someone said, gave us a draw one time, Steve's last name? The engineer?
Wayne Stevens?
Wayne Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne.
Yeah, well, way back in the day, I do remember there was a discussion of for VDOT to come out and paint lines throughout mm-hmm. the area rather than do more of a project. And then when it kind of came to it. Again, I think it kind of came from the board to do more of a streetscape project there.
Right.
This is one of those ones where the thing came up where we could apply for grants,
yep.
and we received a grant with a 20% match.
Right.
Yeah.
But
one thing about it is if they take care of part of that wall mm-hmm. and fix it, that's going to cost money.
So that's the issue about the wall. There was the issue about the drainage. So there was going to be some expenses and costs that were going to come.
Eventually, we were going to incur, and this one is one where we can share it with a 20-80%.
Exactly.
I think those were the biggest decision makers. That's the question you were asking, is why we chose to do this. And to try and make Palmyra more easily accessible, that more people would go up in there.
And I think there's a discussion, too, of making that whole kind of area more walkable from people coming in, because right now it's, and one, from a handicap accessibility standpoint, to get into Civil War Park, it just provides some more accessibility and walkability through the kind of the whole village a little bit, because the wall right there creates a little
bit
of... Do
we have picnic tables in the park?
There are.
Yeah. That's just a place where we can put more picnic tables or just more benches, just to come up and sit down, mm-hmm. read a book.
Yeah. I just don't know whether... So what's the total now? 100.
It'd be $436,000, which was previously it was $317,000, and again, that's the high water mark from what VDOT told me.
I'm wondering just personally if we could look at it by not doing that, but getting the flow the way we want it without all the other things. That's $500,000. I'm not sure. It looks pretty, but I don't know.
I mean, you know, I think that we kind of went through this and the board voted at that time to do it.
Right.
So this
we
is an
did.
Increase. There's always an increase in projects. So
mm-hmm.
How long ago did we approve this?
You approved it, a year ago. Yeah. You approved it in, you approved it in September 20, basically a year ago, is when the board approved the grant and the funding, the 317, the match.
Yeah.
That says 2021, September 1st.
No, well, that's when you approved it. Well, you approved the grant, the board authorized the grant submission, but we were notified about basically a year ago that we received the grant. Mm-hmm. And that's when the board approved the funding for it.
Right.
Well, that's
in
October. October 19th.
So what do we want to do, boy?
It's great to pay 20% for something. And as you said, we've already approved up until now, and said that, or the board did, that should move forward. But what if it goes up another 150? You know, well, is it done going up, and where do we stop?
I think, and I don't know the numbers, but if I recall the numbers for addressing the runoff that's happening down the side and redoing that wall, were pretty substantial. They weren't $400,000. Not saying that, but they were maybe 150.
Some people say 200.
I don't remember the exact numbers.
Yeah. Going, like I said, this was before me being in this position. I mean, going back, I remember some of the cost to one, to do something with the wall repairs and things like that. That was going to be costly. I mean, so this is kind of I don't think it was going to be $317,000 worth of cost. Yeah. So there's an offsetting cost piece to it, but then there's also some improvements in walkability piece to it, and better traffic flow.
The handicap, I remember the handicap was a big thing, because it's not handicapped. So
that's right.
But we can use the same formula for the repairs that were given to us 6 years ago, or however long that was.
Yeah.
We use that same formula, well, we might as well multiply that times at least two, if not three.
Yeah.
Are they ready to start on the project now? Is that?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're pretty much what they're doing. So they've done some of the engineering, and again, you know, just with projects and everything, you know, from the top up, they're like, you know, because they were getting some localities that hold the phone here. This price went up too much for us, and you know, there's some larger projects.
I would say there probably are some big ones where it went up 600,000.
Yeah, there's some big ones out there, and again, this one's all relative in the piece, but they just want to make sure that localities are still. Because again, there are some smaller localities that got surprised on some projects. So I think they just want to make sure that there's no surprises. And like I said, speaking with Scott Thornton at VDOT, he's optimistic that they feel they can bring some of the costs down, and there's some things, but again, they have to plan, and they have to get the commitment up to that amount. That's an up to amount, really.
And we've already allocated the money.
The 317 you already did.
We've already allocated in our budget. So there's,
it is.
There's theory, no budgetary impact, as most of this would probably come out of either CIP or.
This would be fun. I mean, you funded the 317 out of unassigned fund balance, so the additional would just be unassigned fund balance. So,
yeah. I mean, I think we should move forward with that. I think it's an improvement to Palmyra. I think it cleans up the space. I think it makes it more usable. Across the board for enjoyment of the park, opens up the park. I think that was the other part, was it was opening up the park. The park's kind of closed right now.
Yep.
There was no handicap access to it.
Because that was the issue we were going to, that was a pretty good price tag just to make it handicap.
So I feel like it's still a good project.
Could you see the picture again, and which part of the wall that they're taking?
Like, for instance, here, this is the south part of the wall. Some of the wall on the south and kind of go.
That'd be gone, and this would be grass.
Yeah, let me see here. I can't.
From right there where you are, I think going all the way.
Yeah, I think right around here, I saw somewhere the wall goes away and.
All the way to the main street?
Yeah, I can't see. Remove 75 feet part of wall is, I think, what that yellow says.
Off that corner.
Yeah, we're right up 75 feet is supposed to be right in that area.
Let me ask you a question. Well, I wonder if they're going to put it back, or why don't they just remove the whole north end over there?
And again, this is conceptual. They may get to it, and they may say it's simpler
to take it all right there, except for what's on Main Street.
I thought they were removing part of what's on Main Street, because that's where they had the drainage issues.
No, the Main Street piece, that is not part of this.
Where are the drainage issues then?
The drainage issue is right along Main Street, because right along the west side of the park is what Mr. Sheridan said. There's kind of these ditch or whatever.
2 foot, 3 foot deep.
They're not removing the wall on that side.
They're addressing the drainage and doing that.
No, that side they're not. That would have to be a ladder, a later project.
So you're still going to have the big ditch?
That would still be there, yes.
And the wall up by the top of the, where they're going to put the grass, that's got to go away then?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's, Mr. Eager, that's a really good question.
If you're removing all that pavement, it's a really simple move to just remove the concrete right beside it.
Yeah, I don't recall, that one I will say, I don't know if, like right up here, I don't know if all the wall is being removed up there. I think they're making more of a...
Oh, that's at the courthouse. Yeah, I'm not talking about the courthouse. I'm talking about just around the park right there.
Yeah, you would, if you're putting the grass there, you would... That would make no sense to have the wall there.
Yeah, it says
like you said, this was conceptual, and that's probably something they never even factored in or thought about.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I can do is I can double check with VDOT. I mean, this was their conceptual sketch, and again, they're going through kind of the engineering and design, and you know, if there's a way to do that, I mean, if that's what the board wants, I can talk to them about that. And
it's a weird depth, the grass and then the wall.
We need to walk.
Separate
the grass from the grass.
Yeah, there may be an area right here.
Right there, it may stay. Just for drainage issues to force the water down there.
Did you say, somebody asked, and I think I missed the answer, when they're going to do this, start it?
So, So I think if I remember correctly, the construction, let me go in the package here, because it was in, let's see here. I want to say that construction wasn't going to be taking place until about, let's see here. The project's supposed to be done, let's see here. PE is supposed to be done.
Okay. Is that...
I would shut it down because whoever's online can view that, so...
He's gone.
It's gone.
Somebody jumped into the
How did they get in? It was just.
Well,
just,
I let him in.
Yeah,
Was it?
I guess the lake's available to anybody. So.
He was unmuting as fast as I muted. So.
Right. Okay. So again, I apologize for that.
3 years, and that's our first one we've had like that. So.
So it looks like the start date of some of the, looks like this is going to be taking place. Most of the work you would see would be 2025.
The completion.
Let's see.
2025, I thought
something. Yeah, I'm trying to. Well, so here's the construction. Looks like end date would be 27. Because again, the project was going to be spread over from 23 to 26, so you're paying a little bit every year into it. It's not you're paying the whole thing up front.
It may go up more between the now and when they started or ended.
It was relative. My question is, barring something, a dive in the economy, it only is reasonable that this is the cost of this is going to go up. You know, if it's going to be wrapped up by first half of 24 or something, and go, okay,
yeah,
our exposure is less. But I mean, this could this keep increasing until it's done?
So I mean, I will tell you, VDOT put a 20% in here. I think to anticipate future potential costs as a worst case scenario, they put in here. It is. I'm sorry. Here's the inflation factors. So the PE, because it's current, they didn't put an inflation factor in there. The right-of-way work, they almost put a 20% inflation factor in the right-of-way estimates, And then on the construction estimates, again, they increased the estimates, and then they put an inflation factor, a 25% inflation factor, to see the project through, you know, 26. And
when do we start paying for this?
Well, I mean, you would start paying on some of the engineering and stuff now, but you would only pay per year depending on what was happening.
So in other words, if it came back and it was monstrous, we'd just say no.
I don't think so. I mean, I think once they kind of begin the work, I mean...
I'm talking about if it goes up again, don't we get the opportunity to?
We are in the middle of construction at that point in time, yeah. Right?
You've
got a 20%.
Right now, you'll be built in there. Cost for a portion of engineering costs.
That's a pretty hefty number to begin with, right? So, I mean, if it's going up, VDOT's paying 80% of that cost. I'm sure VDOT's well aware of project scope increases on their stuff.
Again, what they did is they increased the base cost, and then they added an inflation factor on top of that cost to push it through, to push it out
in 1 year.
Well, it took us 14 years to do that, half of the streetscape in Portland. Never finished. It's not finished. I don't even know what that cost. And I know in our plan, our strategic plan, it has Fork Union revitalized. I don't know exactly what that means, whether they're going to complete the project or not. And we don't want to start something and then can't finish.
With it front loaded as much as it is, because I was wondering why it went up 50%. Mm-hmm. And that's why, because they're adding whatever they think the additional cost will be. Because it didn't go up 50% in 1 year. I mean, we haven't been going up that much here lately. A couple years back we did, but not now.
Well, it's where do you get the 50% from that?
The construction cost. The construction cost jumped from $900,000 to 1.4 something million. So it went up more than 50%. So that's why I'm saying that, the construction cost itself.
So Eric, we need to, this is an action matter. We need to make a...
Yeah, it's an action decision. To one, if the board wants to continue to move forward.
Okay, right now.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve an additional supplemental appropriation of $118,169 from unassigned fund balance allocated to acquire 20% match for the VDOT Transportation Alternative Program TAP grant for Palm Myra Village Streetscape City CIP project.
Do we have a second?
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. Wright and second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair's
going to
say aye.
I move the Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled Resolution Reaffirming Commitment to the Fund, the Locality Share Projects under Agreement with the Virginia Department of Transportation, and provide signature authority for the Palmyra Village Streetscape Project.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. We have the motion by Mr. Bryan, second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
And Chair votes aye. All right. So we are finished with that one. Thank you all. Appointments. We have the MACA.
Yep. You have two appointees for MACA.
Right.
And we ended up emailing one. We had a little, we didn't pull down the data. What was it, Caitlin? The application deadline for this one. And we got one literally just as the package was printed, so we didn't necessarily have something online that said you can't submit after this, and since it came in basically the day that we were preparing the package, we emailed that one. So you have two appointees. You have Austin Baker and Samantha Wood, and I don't think Samantha Wood is on any other boards, committees, or commission, and yeah. Austin Baker, I think
he's on CPT.
Is it down below here?
Hit the link.
This one?
Yep. Scroll down. Region 10.
Yeah, Region 10.
Sorry.
He's on Region 10?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. You know, Caitlin, you need to take off of the application the, the aging one, because that's no more.
Okay.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
You talking about Ryan?
Yeah. Off the application.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Okay.
I couldn't help myself.
All right, much challenge. All right, so we have Austin.
Is that the speaker?
Austin Baker.
Nope.
Do we have any speakers?
Neither one of them.
Nope.
Austin Baker, pull up his application, and you say he checked a lot of areas.
Yep.
The other, they only checked MACA. She had worked with MACA before, and they all had mental health training.
I think Austin's, we've had that application, we have a chance to look at it, and his credentials in the community service world are strong. I mean, he's got his BS in psychology, qualified mental health professional, 5 years mental health experience, including 3 community service boards. I mean, it seems like we know plenty about him, and unfortunately, the other one came in kind of last minute without as much robust information. It looks like to me he's pretty unqualified.
She had some mental health too, and she also worked with, and she worked with MACA.
Is this hers?
Yeah, this is hers. Yes.
Yeah. He
keeps
going down. She did something that could be housed. She worked a lot with the homeless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, did a lot of work with the Haven.
Right. And when we look at MACA and what they do, they manage the Head Start programs.
It looks like
they do Outward Bound. They do the students, getting students ready for college. They do the food bank. They also want to do more with training on helping people manage their finances. I don't know whether they do a lot with mental health.
I'm okay with either one.
Mm-hmm. I don't know either one.
Pull his application. I want to see his Mr. Austin's application, because you said he's already on which board?
He's on Region 10.
He's on Region 10, which is for him. That's Region 10 is mental health. I want to see where he checked.
Like he did, yeah.
What
did
he checked.
Let's see.
We got it right here, man. Right. Which one here do you want to know? Yeah. Economic Development?
Yeah.
Land Board?
Yeah. All of these things he checked. And he's very capable of doing a lot of things.
I think he came out
for Region
10. Yeah.
I think he did.
Yeah, Region 10.
Yep. I think he sat in the back over there.
Yeah.
Back right.
Yep. Library boy.
I think he was pretty impressive.
Right. He's very skilled in a lot of areas. He checked a lot of things. Now, if you look at the young lady, she checked only one, and that was MACA. And I don't know what date she checked that. And they're good. Both of them are good, I know.
He's young, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Energetic,
so. I don't know how old Ms. Baker is.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter, you're right, it doesn't matter.
We're definitely fortunate to have good qualified candidates for our different boards.
Right, and they meet, their board meet on Thursdays in the afternoon, like 5-something, in Charlottesville. Do we have a motion?
Sure. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board and commission or committee members: Machado Area Community Action Agency for United Citizen Austin Baker. Begins term 8/2/2023, ends term 10/31/2023.
I'm sorry, I'm just laughing because it's for 2.5 months. Yeah. And then we got to do this again.
Yep.
Yeah, Ryan resigned.
Yeah, right.
I second.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Bryant and a second by Mr. Fairchild. All in favor?
Aye.
And chair votes aye. Thank you. Now, let me finish presentation. Zion Crossroad Route 250, Route 15 Wastewater Preliminary Engineering Report. Mr. Dahl.
Yep, I'll have Brett Heim with Dewberry again, and Mr. Popowitz is here. Again, you know, this was a discussion about how to expand the county's infrastructure up at Zion's Crossroads. Again, we've got the distribution lines and the main lines, but to further economic growth in that area, usually what would happen is the county would pay for some of that main infrastructure, and then the connections by the users would offset that as time goes on as well. I'll let Brett talk about the preliminary engineering report and just let me know when you want to go to the next slides.
Sure. Well, good evening and thank you for your time. My name is Brett Heim, with a senior project manager with Dewberry Engineers. And just a quick agenda, I'm going to go over a little bit of terminology. I talk about water and wastewater all day. I know you guys don't, so it might be helpful just to, you know, be able to track along with what I'm sharing with you tonight. Go a little bit into the background of the project, the need for why we're expanding the system, how we sized it, where we located the pump station, gravity sewer, and force main, how we proposed to phase the job, and then what everyone's probably most interested in is the opinion of probable construction costs. Just some terminology. So when we refer to gravity sewer, we're referring to the pipes that are, you know, underground. The flow goes by gravity. Generally, it flows to a wastewater pump station or to a wastewater treatment plant. If it flows to a wastewater pump station, we're able to pump it through a pressurized pipe known as a force main. And that either gets pumped to another portion of gravity sewer, which leads to a wastewater treatment plant, or to another pump station. And so obviously the wastewater treatment plant, that's where we clean and treat the water before releasing it back into the environment. And then the MGE is a unit of flow, and that stands for million gallons per day. So a little bit of the background. So we were tasked by the county to evaluate expanding the wastewater system around Route 250 and south along Route 15. We completed a draft PER in May of this year and the final PER in June. And then keep going, Eric. And so some of what we're looking to capitalize on is with the expansion of the system is to capitalize on the interest in development along Route 250 and 15 and to allow for continued development in those areas around Troy Road, 250 and 15. This was also identified as part of the 2022 board-approved utilities master plan, so it's right in line with the current master plan. And really, it's to be able to support potential developments with utilities in that area. There's an opportunity here to capitalize on that development with cost sharing for expansion of the system in that area. And so, this is just a map of the current wastewater master plan that was included in that utilities master plan. There's a lot of information on here. I'm not going to talk about everything. But on the right-hand side, that hatched-in area that's black with the lines through it, that's the proposed service area of this future pump station. And so, it's right in line with the expansion or with the utilities master plan as it's shown here currently.
And again, just a lot of these little spaghetti lines. Again, the black line, black dotted line, that's the existing force main right now that is in place that goes to the DOC. And again, the dotted lines are the pressurized force mains going back to the main line, and then all the red and blue lines, the solid lines, those are gravity.
And these are all just projects that were identified as potential projects as the system grows, as it's needed.
Yeah, but again, we were just focusing on the black hatched area there.
That's right. So again, this is just a little bit of a zoomed in view of the potential service area. You can see it there in green on the right hand side. The idea is that it would, serve everything basically east of Troy Road and south of 250 and some of that area just north of 250. The existing wastewater pump station service area is shown there in blue, and the existing pump station is identified by that square with a P in the middle of it. And then, as Eric noted on the previous slide, the force main is shown as a dotted line going down to the DOC wastewater treatment plant. Next one. And so some of our reasoning behind how we sized the pump station We sized it, preliminarily for 1 million gallons per day. We're limited by a couple of things. We're pumping this to the existing pump station, so we're limited by the size of that pumping station. So we're not going to exceed the current capacity of that station by sizing it for 1 million gallons per day. And just kind of a rule of thumb, 1 million gallons per day will get you about 4 million square feet of office space, or 5 million square feet of office space, or about 4 million square feet of a shopping center. And then we're also limited at the Department of Corrections wastewater facility. That plant is currently rated for 0.3 million gallons per day, but has the capability in the plans to be able to, or it has the capability to be expanded basically up to 1.8 MGD. And the county is currently in discussions with the DOC to begin evaluating the next stage of expanding that plant up to 0.6 MGD.
And the board previously authorized me to start those discussions with the Department of Corrections just from a discussion standpoint. So we've met with individuals from the Department of Corrections in the state, and so we've given them some potential phasing, and so they're going to go back. I mean, certainly nothing concrete or anything. They're going to go back and see to what degree would they want to work with the county to expand their system for what it could do. Because again, they've got capacity to treat. One, their system is expandable, and then they've got the
nutrient allocations to be able to treat the water.
Yeah. Yep.
So when we relocated the wastewater pump station, we're trying to balance a couple of things. We're obviously trying to balance the cost and the constructability of the facilities, as well as maximizing the area that we're able to capture flow from. We want to be able to leverage existing development interests in the area, so we want to make sure that we capture that. And we also want to attract new business to the county utilities. And so we evaluated three different routings for the gravity sewer. We evaluated five different routings for the force main, and then three different locations for the wastewater pump station. And so I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this, but this was in the report how we evaluated these. But these are really the three primary options that we boiled it down to in the report. The bold red line is your gravity sewer, and you can see that it extends from up above 250 all the way down to basically the intersection of Little Creek Road and Troy Road. And then that's where we located our pump station for option one. Under this option, we had two different force main options, which are shown as the dotted lines, and those are shown conveying flow up to the existing Zion Crossroads wastewater pump station right there on 15. So this was option one. You'll notice some slight differences. It's primarily in the gravity sewer routing and the force main routing. So this option, again, pulls or extends up to 250. It jogs over and behind the Virginia School of Metal along Troy Road, and essentially borders and parallels an existing creek there, and it goes all the way down to just south of Little Creek Road. And generally, pump stations are located at the lowest point in the system. You want to be able to, and gravity sewer are located, along lower points in the system. So that's why we put them in creek beds, because everything kind of flows downhill. And so then when we repump it up, the dotted lines there are shown repumping or as two options to pump it to the existing Zion Crossroads wastewater pump station. And option three, which ended up being the recommended option, it is shown there. And again, it diverges a little bit away from the creek at that point. And it's shown just south of Little Creek Road. This option, it was the recommended option not only because it was the shortest route, which resulted in the shortest cost, it was the shortest gravity sewer route and the shortest force main route, but it also impacted the fewest amount of property owners, which is definitely something we want to be conscious of when we do these projects. And
plus one thing too, since some of the other options where the pump station was going, it was going more into a residential area. And so there was only one vacant property there. So if you wanted to have a bunch of individual residences hook into it, well, then maybe you'd want to put it elsewhere. But again, they've got current existing systems in place. So if you route it this way, it lends a little bit more to a business development side too. So
right.
that's kind of some of the thoughts.
Yep. And so then thinking through some of the phasing of the project, you know, the idea was really to not spend the money when we don't have to. So phase one would include the building of the pump station and the force main, which is, you know, most necessary to be able to convey flow from this area to the existing wastewater pump station. The parcels along Route 15 are more likely to develop sooner rather than along the gravity sewer route. And then we would also be able to leverage potential cost sharing with the developers in this area. They would essentially be responsible for extending, you know, if they're developing along 15, they would be responsible for extending gravity sewer to the pump station location. And then, you know, for phase two, this extension up to Route 250, that would basically be, you know, at the point when demand in that area, you know, requires us to extend the gravity sewer up there. And so our opinion of cost is shown here, again, for the three different options. For option one, which was the longest flow or gravity sewer option and force main option, we're showing about $10.3 million. For option two, which was just the next shortest one, we were at $9.8 million. And for option three, the total project cost for phase one and two is about $8.3. And so for that phase one, we're with the force main and pump station, we're at about $4.5 million that we estimate for those facilities. And the next slide, I think, just touches briefly on the timeline. So for phase one, we think we can get the design and the easement acquisition completed within 12 months. For the force main and pump station, the construction period would be probably 12 to 18 months. And then for phase two, about a 12-month design period and easement acquisition period, and then construction's a little bit shorter there because we're not as dependent on mechanical and electrical components, which are much of the longer lead items in driving project schedule when we get to construction. I know that was a lot of information. I'm happy to answer any questions you all might have.
Do we have a better picture of phase three? Because here's my one question. I'm sitting here.
You said about phase three.
Right here, right there. It looks to me like that's going right down through the middle and is sitting right in the middle of that piece of land that could one day be a business.
Right there, I will say there is some lower wetland.
I know that's some wetlands.
Lower wetland areas there. So you would have a lot heavier lift from a business trying to...
I just don't want to lose an entire acreage. That's my only thought.
Sure.
It's not my expertise. Looking at it, I was like, it's going right down through the middle of it.
And again, this is the preliminary engineering report. Right. It doesn't mean that this is exactly where it is, but this is...
That was my only thought.
Yeah, looking at the options.
If we go down the middle of it, then we limit them what they can do.
Yeah, so, I mean, we locate them in the lower areas generally because that land is less usable. That's kind of why we looked at that this particular location, but obviously that would be something that we would, you know, consider when we...
That was my only question.
Sure.
So from a growth projection standpoint, the need for the sewer, this capacity, and working with VDOT, I mean, with the Department of Corrections, we're anticipating this need in the next 3 years. I know it's a little early to say still, but
it is. You know, I think it depends upon what you see along 15 here. That's some of the. If you see more development happening, or if the board wants to see more development happening from Starlight Business Park going south on 15, well, if you don't have this in place, you're not going to be able to have development there, because again, you need the low spot to be able to pump it back up to our existing pump station. So I guess it could be a couple things. I mean, it's not a capacity. I mean, there's certainly a capacity issue. I mean, because if DOC doesn't have the capacity, building this doesn't make any sense. But if you want to start growing the business coming down 15, kind of where, I guess from a little south of where the pump station is to Little Creek area, that's where you would want to see that in place.
And we already have the warehouse space approved about right where that is, isn't that?
Across the street. Yeah, I mean, basically right around that area. Yeah.
That's right. That's the bottom of that lot. Right.
That is the lowest part of our CPA right there. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where the CPI is.
Doesn't go down to Shepherd Lane.
Past Shepherd Lane.
Yeah.
This is where the little white lines right there straight across from it or where the wood trees were cleared.
Yeah.
Well, knowing that that is going in there and that's the far end of it, you're certainly going to expect to see the growth along 15, I would assume, right?
In between here, you're more likely to have growth along that area of 15 rather than needing to install that. I mean, again, if you don't have the pump station here, that's why I talked about phasing. The gravity sewer is, there's no point in doing the gravity sewer if you don't have the pump station there to pump it back up to the existing pump station.
Sure.
So you either are doing it all at once or you take a bite of it at a time. And this, it's more likely in that stretch that you're going to see the need from a development standpoint. And again, there's no action here today. And again, it just, brought to the board. Again, there's...
And I guess the last question is, we know that, the last question from my part, we know that there is always inflation, if you would, in terms of projects. If you delay, what is typical in these types of programs? Is it 5%, 10%, 15% per year?
Yeah, we would probably, so obviously the dollars that we presented are in today's dollars. We could extrapolate those based on what we think inflation's gonna be down the road. That's how we would basically benchmark it.
I think inflation's a bad term. We have inflation, but
sure.
What's typical type of cost increases per year in your industry? Maybe different from inflation. Right?
Typical is blown out the window in the last 3 years, unfortunately. it's really hard to say in this environment, and that's just my honest answer. We're doing our best we can with these estimates. We build in, this has a 25% contingency built into it already. So we're already estimating that the total cost, the cost that we presented here was 25% higher than what we actually believe the cost will be.
And usually when you, in a normal period when you do contingency, you're maybe adding in 10%
right.
or something like that.
Right, but in the last 3 years you say it's gone out the window. What
yeah.
have you seen?
It's been I would say the worst job to have right now is a cost estimator because we're still plagued with delays for materials. Like certain materials are really expensive, certain materials are not so expensive, and it depends on who gets to it first sometimes, unfortunately.
And that's a little bit too with having all that stimulus money, ARPA and CARES
right.
money, and there was so much money put out there for infrastructure projects that there's just a lot of demand and the supply isn't necessarily as much there. I think in some of the projects, and again, we'll be talking about more utility stuff, later on as we talk about the JRWA, but again, a lot of things like mechanical stuff, the prices on pipe and mechanical stuff have really gone up over the past years just because of some of that.
Right, and a lot of those ARPA funds they have to be used by 2026. So we kind of think that there will be some type of slowdown at that point, but will there be another stimulus bill at that point? Who knows? We're beholden to higher elected representatives. So, in a lot of those instances.
Okay, and next other question.
This one is not. This is more of a statement than anything else. Probably for Bobby. We talked about the expansion of the sewer plant at the prison. We don't want to wait until we've filled up everything we've got. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure we have that in our pocket. Is there any way we can keep a running total going of where we are and how much we have left?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what our allocation is?
Right.
As far as allocation, as far as...
just so we have something to look at to know. In the back of our mind, we better be prepared by this point. I guess is what I'm saying, to have this done.
Yeah, I think what you're... Let me kind of reframe it. So
that's why I was looking up. I'm sitting here trying to figure out how to phrase this.
Right now we don't know what each individual lot or development is going to be doing, but we can find out some of those numbers and maybe give you a projection on some of that.
If we can get a running number mm-hmm. going, so how long is the expansion for 300,000 gallons going to take, Mr. young man from Dewberry, can you answer that one?
Yeah, I mean, so there's obviously going to be like a preliminary engineering stage. Yeah. That's probably about a year-long period. The design stage is probably another year-long period. And then construction, you know, you're talking at least a year for construction.
But I think you're saying, like, I think the question you're asking, Mr. Sheridan, is that $300,000 from a projection standpoint, how long does it take before that runs out?
Is no. Okay. I'm talking about, do we need to get that ball rolling now?
Well, yeah, and again, some of that is some of the discussions with the DOC. I mean, if you don't have some of those discussions going with the DOC, like, some of this, again, there may be benefit if you see all your growth happening right on 15. Again, you're going to get growth along, 250. Yeah, 250 and stuff like that.
We've already seen that.
Yeah, but some of the downfalls with that is that the force main on 250, you don't necessarily want people just hooking into your force main.
Right.
It's not good practice. You want businesses going into a pump station and then pumping it in and everything from the force main going back to the DOC. So really, when this was created, you know, there's going to need to be some of these regional pump stations along the 250 line, and that kind of goes back to this right here. Again, the black dotted line is the force main, but as you expand the system along 250, it's not good practice to hook directly into the force main. You're going to have, you know, where you see all these, where the P's are, you're going to need to have, you know, some regional pump stations along 250. So the businesses go to the pump station, you know, right here, there's one nearby 250. So, you know, you have less gravity mains and then force mains. So that's the ideal, is they go to a pump station and then it gets pushed back into the force main.
Do any of these projects qualify for the, you know, federal, you know, infrastructure program?
Yeah, and certainly those are some of the things that we're going to look at. I mean, I know there was something for, I think you sent me something for, was it DEQ or something? I believe, but yes, I mean, I think with some of the stimulus money out there, there are still some opportunities for that. But again, before you even submit for that, if you don't have a plan in place or where you're trying to expand first, they want to see something in place first before some type of preliminary engineering report before they would provide grant funding to move a project forward.
That's correct. So would it make sense to do the preliminary engineering, sooner than later?
For a lot of that stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, you could. I mean, I don't necessarily know if it would make sense to do it along the whole route. I think what you need to do is you really need to look at what are your target areas and what are your areas that are more likely to develop sooner than later. I mean, certainly there's some areas in there that there's land that's larger land that's vacant, that's being marketed, that's more likely to happen. And there's some land that's, you know, there's, you know, some houses are along some areas and that's less likely. So that's where, from a PER, you want to focus it on where you see development happening sooner than later. And that's kind of what the phasing approach would be.
Right.
I mean, you could certainly do a whole PER, but then, you know, you don't want to do all the work up.
Yeah, I would say the master plan kind of guides you to where you want to target that development. And that was the whole impetus for that. And that when you see the growth heading in certain areas, then you can pick off those projects from the master plan and say, we want to do a PER for this area.
Okay, any other questions, comments?
Today's Bobby's birthday.
Yeah. Plenty night again, right?
Yeah.
Did you guys bring beer?
Bobby.
I know where it's at.
Happy birthday. Wow. Okay, thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we have our dogs running at large ordinance. Our county attorney, Mr. Whitten.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. So last month, the board received a presentation from Mr. Dahl on the running large ordinance, and he discussed basically there's been concerns of residents and the sheriff's office over the years requesting a not running a large ordinance. Right now, it's only in Lake Monticello. And so, actually, that part of the code would need to be amended anyway because it only states it's in the Cunningham District, and it's also two other districts need to be added to the code with the redistricting. So, in your packet, the Louisa County ordinance is in there. What I did is I drafted an ordinance that's similar to Louisa County's and kind of incorporated their language into our ordinance. Here's the next slide.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
So, basically, the optional amendments to section 4-2-2 basically it'd be applicable countywide. It'd be enforced by sworn law enforcement officers. Right now, we only have one animal control officer. So that was one request, is that we have language from the sheriff's office. It was requested all sworn law enforcement officers could enforce it. The exemptions, this came up during the last meeting. So basically, there would be exemptions for dogs that are engaged in lawful hunting or training for hunting. There'd also be an exemption for dogs assisting in farming activities. The law enforcement officer could take the dog into possession and return the dog to the owner or custodian with a warning. Similar to the language in Louisa County, after three warnings within 2 years, it would be a $100 fine. Now, obviously, we could change that. We could give the board, if they wanted, one warning, two warnings before the fine. So it'd be a $100 fine. It wouldn't, some counties have a criminal, you can get a criminal citation where it's a misdemeanor. Here, it's just a $100 fine. Next slide. Now, the required language, in 2019, the Virginia Code Section 3.2-6538 was amended, and it stated if a locality has running a large ordinance, then you have to include language stating that if a dog is found running a large in a pack, that the owner or custodian is subject to a civil penalty of $100 per dog set found. So a dog's running in a pack if it's part of a group of one or more other dogs, basically. So even if we didn't change it to countywide, we would need to amend the ordinance to add this running in a pack language, but it would be applicable within Lake Monticello, which is where it's applicable now. Because the state code says you can have running a large ordinance that's applicable to a certain section of the county or certain subdivisions, or it can be countywide. So kind of, you know, the state code gives that latitude. Next slide. So basically that's everything I have. If there are any questions.
What if the dog does not have a tag and you don't know who the owner is, where would they take the animal?
So if the dog didn't have a tag, they would take it to the Humane Society, SPCA.
SPCA.
Is my understanding. Now, we do have a section of the code where if they don't have the rabies tag or their dog license, it's a separate fine. Right now, that's enforced through Animal Control and the Commonwealth Attorney's Office. One thing I've talked to the Commonwealth Attorney about is since I'm on board and once I hire an assistant county attorney, it might be that we take over some of the animal control duties from the Commonwealth Attorney, but that'll be a little bit in the future. If the dog has the dog tag, then they would just take the dog back to the owner. They would have the phone number on there or the address, and the animal control officer would take that. Deputy Strong is not here tonight, but she said if there's any questions, I'll contact her tomorrow if any questions. And she said she'd be present. If the board does want to bring this forward for an ordinance amendment, she would be present at those meetings.
Can you go back to the one that talked about 2 years?
How does this look? Yes.
Okay, once the owner concerned has three or more violations within 2 years, it seemed like a long time.
And again, the board can make changes to that. That's really just based on Louisa's ordinance.
Right.
So, for instance, in Warren County, where I previously worked, it was a class 4 misdemeanor the first time, or it was a prepayable $50 fine. That's kind of a really strong warrant where you can kind of meet in the middle and maybe give them one warning before you have a $100 fine. It doesn't have to be criminal, it could be just a $100 fine. Sure. But you can just get one warning and then.
Right. I think the three or more is more, and I think it's a little bit very lenient. Three or more.
And Captain,
we don't know what more means. I think we need to be more specific.
Well, in other words, if there's three but no action was taken in the board. It doesn't, I mean, at that point, it's up to you.
I'll just use me as an example, Ms. Booker.
All right, go ahead. Here's a good example.
My lab, he's going to run through my underground fence that I paid $2,000 for. Mm-hmm. Now, my three females will stay there as long as he's on his lead chain. But he breaks that lead chain every once in a while and takes off. Mm-hmm. I think that's why they have the three things there. Is situations where a hunting dog might chew through the chain link or dig out under the fence. Those things happen. It's just, I think that's why those things are there.
And Captain Peterson's here. I don't, okay. Like I said, he may have input or questions.
Does that sound
or,
like your dog's getting out all the time?
It sounds like he needs to
pick him. So I would say that's fair. I mean, especially for the 99% of the population, we'll have some owners that their dogs get out all the time, 3, 4, 5 times a week. But again, with anything, law enforcement, we have ability to find the person or not. So that's all based on judgment of the officer at the time. So I think that's fair as it reads. But whatever you guys decide, obviously we're gonna do it. But it's a tool for us for those who are system violators.
Yeah.
For the
habitual
offenders. Offenders. Yes. Yeah. Not Mr. Sheriff.
Right.
I got one neighbor that beats it. They'll send me pictures of them laying on her lap.
Oh. I think that's part of what this comes down to is that just because a dog got out doesn't mean it got reported to the police.
Right.
And so you can have those situations where your lab's getting out and, the neighborhood knows the dog, blah, 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 or whatever. So for there to, it seems it would have to be an aggravated situation almost for there to be a three-time.
Yes.
And I think it's going to be the way that the owner responds to law enforcement.
Correct.
I mean, that's not my dog. I don't care. I think this gives them the chance, because some owners are going to be, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Or there's a dog that just like some owners just letting them literally run at large and they're just terrorizing the neighborhood. I mean,
it's usually aggressive dogs that we're giving calls on, like attacking chickens or whatever. Livestock, things like that.
WESA does have in our code section where they specifically list certain subdivisions, and in those subdivisions, they don't get a warning. It's $150 fine.
I mean, you could make it more restrictive in some areas, too.
You could say, Lake Monticello, you don't get a warning.
But I think Lake Monticello, that's in the HOA rules anyhow. I think.
You haven't had the chief of police here as well.
Yeah, but he looks like he's back there back with police, so I'm not sure if he's been thinking clearly.
I would prefer that we keep the current HOA, the current law regarding to Lake Monticello. Because yes, it is an HOA rule, but our rules are just civil penalties that are very difficult to enforce and don't have a lot of, pardon the pun, teeth behind them. Whereas if I can just write them a summons.
Excuse the pun.
if we can use the summons for the habitual issues, and again, like anywhere else, it's warrant summons or arrest. That's our options on a lot of things. Your dog gets out, it's a one shot deal. It's no big deal. But when we have habitual problems or other instances like we've had in the past where they get out and harm people, and the owner just doesn't give a care. Let me rephrase my language here. We need something to enforce that. We're a lot more population dense than the rest of the county, so I would just ask that you keep that one section, then do this one as well.
Do we have to have a public hearing on that?
So are you saying keeping the ordinance in place at a specific time?
For Lake Monticello, or just modify this one to where there's no three chances in 2 years, because that's going to be, for tracking purposes, that's going to be hard to do, and I prefer that if he's out.
In the lake.
Yes. Still have no dogs at large in the lake.
Oh, that's the rule is no, but yeah.
So for law enforcement, for sheriff's office, we can only enforce the county ordinance. We can't enforce Lake Monticello.
Right. So even if I don't have anybody available and a deputy comes out, they can't really do anything. And we don't have the means to pick up the dog and carry it back. We just have to figure out who owns it, send them a certified letter, wait for them to come back and wait for a compliance hearing, and then let them pay the $50. So it's just easier if we can issue a summons on scene.
So right now in our current ordinance, there's no warning. Is this $100 fine within Lake Monticello?
For Lake Monticello.
Okay. That's what he's requesting.
With the changes to the districts, making sure that the correct districts are attached to Lake Monticello. Because I think it just says Cunningham right now.
Correct. Cunningham.
Now, do we do any public hearing on this?
That'll come in two or three weeks,
in September maybe.
Yeah, so like for instance, today if the board said if we want to move forward with an ordinance for this, what we would do is we would advertise and we'd probably schedule it for the September, second meeting in September. We'd advertise the ordinance change and we'd bring kind of the final ordinance to the board and there'd be a public hearing and the public could comment on it. But we'd probably try and get it for the second meeting in September. So that's where if the board wants to move forward, we just need some guidance on, yes, we want to move forward, and is there anything you want to change in kind of what we discussed?
How do we document violation results in warning to owner?
Yes, ma'am. We have a CAD system. We track all those calls. So okay. We'll know how many times we've been there.
It's not a verbal.
Correct.
Go get your number, dogs.
You probably know some. Some of your folks are probably very familiar with some of the dogs.
They are.
So did you look at others too? Other municipalities?
I did. I mean, the other two localities I worked in, we had running a large ordinance, and then I looked at the other localities around here. So some localities do it criminal, some civil, and some do it where you have specific subdivisions where it's not allowed, some it's countywide. So the county, I mean, the state code gives a lot of latitude how the board wants to implement it.
Like I noticed Albemarle's is a little more robust at least in the wording, or they give more detail to. Did you look at Albemarle's at all?
I didn't look specifically.
Okay. I mean, just one small example, like ours says, hunting dogs or
training.
Let's see.
And I could always do a spreadsheet at the next meeting showing the other localities how they handle the ordinance and the different options.
Talking about hunting dogs, but here it says we're engaged in lawful hunting, training. Hunting or training for hunting under the direction of its owner or custodian. Like I noticed Albemarle's, and I'm not sure that this is terribly relevant because it does say lawful in ours, but it says company of a licensed hunter where the dog is participating in organized fox and other game hunt. So
I think license and lawful might be, I'm not a lawyer.
Lawful would mean you need to have a license,
right,
to hunt properly.
The one thing I will say about that is you buy it in August when the hunting season comes up. So you might, but there may be a lapse where you can catch them in a 2-week stretch. That would be my only thing with that. Where it's somebody that runs dogs all the time, they have to train them. Most of them now have spent thousands of dollars on GPS systems and can tell you exactly how many times they're barking, how fast they're running, and where they're going.
Yeah. That's a good start.
They may not be with them, but
you can always amend.
Most of them can tell you, okay, he's right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can add license. I mean, it's a little more specific. It's fine. Add that language.
It says legal.
Like I said, the one problem with license is you don't usually buy that license the same day every year, so you're going to have a lapse. That would be my only thing.
Sure.
And I see where Albemarle has an exemption for like their dog parks, where obviously we have a dog park, so we don't have to.
That'd be great.
So some of the exemptions are kind of obvious.
But in Pleasant Grove, that may be one of the places that y'all have a lot of issues going, or used to. I don't know if you do anything.
I mean, we still have quite a few people out there that let their dogs run, but they're controlled. And they're not letting them run around with kids and people and attack them. So.
And the board...
Spirit of the law.
The board, I don't remember if the policy, but there are some designated on-leash, off-leash areas in Pleasant Grove Park.
That's what we did, because they had an issue years back. Especially, I know the cross-country team did, because they had a couple of kids. In fact, coach actually got that one time with his own brother.
And you all feel good about this ordinance as written?
We do. I sat with Deputy Strong, who is our SCO, after County Attorney sent it over to us. It looked good to us. She didn't have, I think she had, did she send you some edits? I think she had a few comments.
She has had a few comments.
Yeah, so we sent it back. Other than that, it's a tool we don't have now, so anything's better than nothing. And some of the recent cases we had, so we kind of sparked it. So.
And so, what is our next step with this?
Well, I guess to just look for from the board some guidance if we want to have warnings for the parts of the county other than Lake Monticello, or if we want to be, we don't have warnings, we just go straight to a fine countywide. I guess some guidance on that question, because I know Chief has requested that there not be warnings for Lake Monticello.
And I also request that. I don't know if marrying the two together, my concern is if we married them together and then the countywide one doesn't go, I'd hate to see the Lake Monticello one disappear.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Well, it wouldn't disappear, you'd be amending the code. Okay. So you wouldn't appeal on the whole code section.
Be interesting.
Actually, right now it doesn't apply to cutting out.
That's true.
People will be very opinionated.
Yeah. Chasing the dog inside of that district.
Yeah. And I think this gives them what they're looking for, the opportunity to deal with people who are habitual, who are belligerent, for lack of a better word, that just don't care.
Not like good neighbors. Said. We do need the, I've heard a few times today already that whether we're going to automatically give them a fine, we do need officer discretion too. So the wording that can't be shall, because shall to us means we will, and we don't have a choice. Or we need the option to say maybe issue a fine of $100.
And a lot of times when you get to court, the judge may say, no, you had a visible offense. That was the first time. Now I'm just don't charge court costs and I'll pay the fine. So the judge always has that discretion too.
And it'd be different in Lake Monticello. Whether the dog came from Lake Monticello or from outside.
That's right. True. And back to the issue of the compliance issue, that only applies to residents. So if there's a guest or somebody's dog from, even though they're not supposed to come in from across the street, they do. And walk their pets. So if somebody's dog came in and got off and bit somebody or anything else, we can't charge them with a compliance hearing. So that's where having the code section helps as well.
I mean, I got a chocolate lab. We back up to Lake Monticello. He's an invisible fence. He gets out sometimes. He goes right to houses in Lake Monticello, you know, and everybody knows him and everything, but
we've never got a call on your dog, sir.
You what?
We've never got a call on your dog.
Those are the calls we don't get. We get the calls like,
yeah.
Jadal said, it's the aggressive,
And the habitual nuisances where
coming over to attack.
It's the third time in the yard.
That's kind of my point, is that there's discretion. It's not an aggressive situation.
Our deputies know I can probably speak for Chief, we're not out going to try to stroke everybody for a running at large citation, obviously. And take everything into consideration, and when we need to use that tool, it's there for us.
Yeah, I think the main thing is this is for the habitual repeat offenders that just have no regard for their neighbors and everyone around them.
So I think the last recent couple time blends together. So I think it was in the last 3 months. One of the dogs that got away attacked some chickens next door. The owners were very upset, and I think the owner of the dog said, what are you going to do about it? There's nothing we can do about it except for a few things. So that's kind of what sparked all this. Something we can use as a tool. Even if it's a small fine, the hassle of having to go to court and everything, that's something versus nothing.
A lot cheaper to buy the chicken at the grocery store.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Well, so we'll just, if we... The next step is it'll come back in front of us in this form. Is that right?
I can have two options with the ordinance. I can have one where it has the warnings and one where there's not a warning. You can look at the two different options and advertise the one that you feel more comfortable with.
No, we can amend it too. I'm in favor of the warning myself.
What did you say?
I said I'm in favor of the warnings myself. Again, it's not... It's discretion. It's not a way to raise revenue per se, right? The lake is maybe different because it's larger and
The only downside to warnings is a lot of people may try to talk to their neighbors two or three times on their own, and then if they still don't get action, so they might call us For us, that'd be the first warning, but it might actually be the fourth time that the neighbors talked to him about their animal.
But though it's got to be written to not exclude the current thing from the lake anyhow.
Yeah, so. I'll just put it out there, kind of like, that's the only down part of the warning.
Would it be out of protocol to ask what I call our resident Savannah person who dealt with the dog bite to give you her? I just wonder from her perspective as a parent who had a really violent thing happen with a dog bite.
I don't want to put.
I'll make this real easy. Would the three warnings put you in a bad spot, or would you rather have it be the shall beforehand?
What do you mean?
Would you rather just be shall, and then the first time you show up, if they want to be not a very nice citizen?
We like officer discretion at times, so if you say shall, I have to.
Get my word. I teach PE now.
That's true.
Three warnings.
Weightlifting.
Discretion.
Protein. Right? Yeah. So take the shall. I would suggest, if we want to give a warning, take the word shall to give us that discretion, because if it's a charcoal lab running, because I have a charcoal lab as well, I know she's not going to do anything.
That's not where you got it.
Trying to sell snow. I know, right? So I know if the officer comes, we know his dog isn't attacking anybody. It's more of the aggressive behavior type stuff that
right.
We need the ability to do the things then.
I was asking Jennifer, though, and I think you were.
I don't think that's a good idea.
I would say no.
Okay.
Personally.
Yeah.
Just because the trauma levels involved and all that.
Yeah.
On all sides of the house.
So the one clarification on the dogs running in a pack, that's language from the state code, and that is shall.
Right.
So that's not optional.
Yeah.
That's the difference. If they're running a pack, so there's more than one dog, then the officer doesn't have that discretion.
Okay, well, when you say pack, are you talking about a wild pack? Because one of my females follows my lab out, and all of a sudden I'm a pack.
It's two dogs. It could be two dogs.
Two or more dogs.
It's a pack. Yeah. Hmm. That was language that was added in 2019. Should we say code?
Yeah. Hunters don't turn loose one of the pack. That's one thing.
I think we're clear then, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You think you've got your direction?
We can just have it a little bit separate. Like Monticello's language would be a little bit different than the rest of the county, which that's the way Louisa does it. They have certain subdivisions that have different language than the rest of the county. So we can do something similar to that and we can bring it back to the board.
Okay.
If there's any other tweaks at that point, we can still make tweaks before we advertise it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you,
gentlemen.
Thank you.
Next, truckers. Trailer.
Yeah, we'll try to be really quick on this. Again, we were notified by the sheriff's department, so there's an issue. It's an ongoing issue, and this is. So there's a steep incline at the bottom of 618 Lake Monticello Road and South Boston Road. There's instances where tractor trailers coming through this area are stalling out here because they come to a stop and trying to go up a steep incline. Mm-hmm. They're stalling out and it's creating traffic issues there. And again, it's not an ongoing issue, but so speaking with the sheriff's office, speaking with VDOT, what things can be done to do that? Certainly to have a sign that says no through trucks. That is a hard and fast thing that requires VDOT to do a special study. It takes time. It can take a year. It's way more involved. All we're looking for as a potential first step, and this doesn't take anything. This is something that VDOT's looking at right now. Is just getting a sign, and again, it just happens. This sign was in Stevensburg. They have a Route 600. So again, just putting a sign in there that says, truckers, Route 16 is not recommended for tractor trailers. Again, there's no meat, there's nothing behind it that says you're going to pull them over. It's just a recommendation. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they don't go up there. And I know Captain Peterson, there's been a couple instances where.
I will tell you right now, twice last year when I was on the school bus, we talked about this.
Sir.
I came up the hill, and right as the first curve happens, there's a tractor trailer sitting there going, man, it just broke down. And you got the traffic coming down the hill, and I'm trying to go up the hill. And anyway.
It happens probably half a dozen times a year, probably takes about 4 or 5 deputies to control the traffic because we have to be on High Point, Bull Point, and then that takes 3 right there at Lake Monticello in South Boston. And sometimes they're broken down 2, 3, 4 hours. So really resource heavy because they can't get up the hill, and sometimes they go down the hill and can't stop, which causes another problem. Or crashes into other cars, which...
Is there a way to report those kinds of things on... Because I know truckers use a GIS... they use their own, you know, GIS system for trucking. And I know this because on Route 53 right there on the turns by
Buck Island?
No, by...
Monticello.
By Monticello there. I had... That truck was coming up and literally ran over one of my cars, you know, and the other car behind it. You know, my employee was in the car, and the truck was so long that, you know, as he was making the turn around it, his back end was on top of the top of the front end of my car. Unfortunately, nobody was hurt, but, you know, the trucker, he was, of course, distraught. He says, you know, it's on my GIS system that I can take this. Yeah, and I just don't know if there's an actual way to report those kinds of things.
So I don't know the question on that, but I can definitely get the answer.
Yeah.
State police would know.
It's great to have that, but also if it's in the GIS system.
True. I'll get with our troopers and find out how we get that through their system, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're going to work with VDOT to get a sign like this installed there, just something simple. Again, maybe it stops one truck from going up there, and again, there's really no cost to the county, and it saves the resources of the sheriff's deputies. And again, it's not a lot, but that one occasion or two occasions that they have to get 3-4 extra deputies out there to manage it is just it's a use to
it would be helpful. And then we can say, hey, did you not see the sign?
Yeah.
Are you see the sign? The signs everywhere. It's
harrowing.
And things like that breed crashes as well. So a truck stuck on Lake Monticello Road on that hill can breed a pretty serious crash because people don't pay attention, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just a hot mess. And I think that Mr. Dole and I talked about it, I think, a week or two ago. It will definitely help, I think.
It's a start without going down the long, tedious road of trying to do a study and then taking 12 months to have something that's more... That's more teeth behind it, so to speak. So,
but you have to have trucks go, but they can come from the other end of it, right? Instead of hitting the hill. It just means they have to go around.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So anyway, that's just wanted to just inform the board more of that. So.
All right. Thank you. JRWA project
cost. Yes, JRWA project cost. Okay. So again, I brought this to the board an update back in, it was December of 2022, about JRWA project costs. So again, just for those that are here or online or in the room, again, the original project where I have on the screen says old route. This was the intake on the Point of Fork, and that was roughly the route, and we are connecting to an existing water line right there that Louisa County has going all the way up into their county. Ferncliff and then connects into our system. So the old route was about, I want to say about a mile and a half, no greater than. And again, you know, and I'll give the next slide. The new route that we've been looking at is about 3 to 4 times that distance. It's about a 4-mile route. And again, to kind of go back to that, you know, really this kind of precipitated by the community and by the Monacan Indian Nation, showing that the Point of Fork was Razwick and was the burials of their ancestors there. And so from that, the JRWA and through Department of Historic Resource and lots of state agencies decided to move the pump station to what is called Alternative 1C, or if you go back, the new route, which is the 4-mile route. Again, the Monacan Indian Nation, they issued a letter of support for that, for the new route. And again, so just kind of talking what's been done, you know, there's been phase 1 archaeological surveying that's been done along the whole route. Decision to proceed. There was a August of 2022 a joint permit application submitted to the Army Corps and DEQ. you know, move forward with a comprehensive agreement to design, for design and engineering services and lots of other things. The fall of 2022, phase two archaeological and architectural surveying took place. That needs to be done from a Department of Historic Resources standpoint, just because there are some spikes, some spots that were known resources, and making sure there's no other resources in the area. So kind of that brings us to where we are kind of now, summer of 2023. So through that comprehensive agreement, there's been an initial design completed, which gives us, which is called the GMP, Guaranteed Maximum Price, for the construction of the project. We've got our, we're expecting our permit applications from DEQ and Army Corps. DEQ, right now we've got a draft permit application that is out, and that's out for comment for 30 days. And then, you know, usually what happens, DEQ's application gets approved first, and then the Army Corps kind of follows suit. We are in the process of, right now, there is a phase through archaeological data recovery field work and study. The RFP is out. And then, you know, we've been working towards property acquisition. We haven't purchased any properties, but there's been strong discussions on some of the key properties. So really where that brings us, let me get rid of this here. Really where that brings us is what's the cost of the project at this point. So when I reported to the board back in December of last year, the estimated construction price was just under $35 million at that point. Now the construction price is about $39.6 million for the construction piece. In addition to the construction piece, there's a lot of other components in here in this $5.9 million. There's permitting, there's property acquisition, there's the phase three field work and studying. There's Dominion electric transmission line construction, you know, construction, administration, and inspection. So out of this $5.9 million, this is a high water estimate right now. This is a worst case scenario. Out of this $5.9 million, there was about three factors in here that total $5 million, and we're hoping in the next couple months to get some more clarity. One, there's the RFP for the phase three, which that could potentially be not as much as we hoped it is. So we're waiting to see where that price comes in. The one thing is for sure is the price to construct the project and finishing out some of the small design components after working with the design build engineer, almost $7 million is the cost for the project. So again, total price for both of those components is $45.6 million. Again, this $5.9 will probably come down some, but we'll find out more in the coming months what that is. So let me kind of go back. I mean, so again, let's just say it's a $45.6 million project. Let's just say that's where it ends up. One thing is for certain, we have the JRWA still has about $4 million of proceeds that they originally took out for the project back in 2017. So that 45.6, you know, brings you down to about 41 and some change. And then in addition, you know, so that's a 50-50 share between Fluvan and Louisa for that 20-some million dollar project. The JRWA did submit for a grant application to VDH for, I want to say it's right around $40 million for total project costs. I think we're supposed to get some information, or we're supposed to announce awards, I think September, October timeframe. And then in addition, Fluvanna County, as we were going through the proffers with Dominion, we had earmarked some money from, at the time, what we thought was going to be the price of the project and for our portion of the project. And certainly those prices have gone up, as Brett, you know, certainly spoke about before, talking about water and sewer projects. The last 3 years, they've been estimating those projects is a different world than what it was. So again, we're at somewhere. What I reported to the board back in December was construction plus some of these other things was going to be a $35 to $40 million project. Now we're looking a $40 to $45 million project potentially.
I thought that we were not able to use the Dominion funds for the JOWA.
We are allowed to use it for our portion of the water line that goes to Route 6.
Good, that's good news.
So we can't use it from Route 6 to the...
Correct.
That's all we can use.
Yeah. So we can use it for our portion of that.
And we originally thought our portion at the start of this was going to be what again?
For this total project?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when we were back at the point of fork, I mean, I think when this kind of first came out, when we took out debt proceeds for that about mile and a half project, looking at no more than $10 million.
I don't even know if that was our portion. I think it was like six.
Well, no, I'm sorry, $10 million was the total.
I think it's five.
For us, I thought the whole project was 11.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying our portion was 10. I'm saying the total project was 10 to maybe a little bit
that
more.
That's correct.
Yeah.
$5.5 million, something like that.
And again, that was on a mile and a half project. Now, because of having to move that project, we're at a project that's, you know, 3 to 4 times that length, and
about $10 million a mile. I mean, that's just kind of
so exacerbate that times so the length. Yeah. Exacerbate that by as
we are right back to where we were in 2008 when Louise and flew down and talked about it coming the James up 15, and it was going to be $25 million a piece.
Yep.
16 years ago. So we're still at $25 million, 16 years later. Oh. But if we hadn't done it, we would have never done it because that's when everything crashed. If we had done it then, we'd have 16 years of...
So, I mean, just to talk about some future timelines, I mean, so Louise is going to be... Christian with Louisa is going to be bringing this to his board next Monday. We've got a James River Water Authority board meeting next week, so we're going to kind of be sending out we've emailed the board, all the boards on this, on kind of the total cost and kind of discussing it. You know, certainly from a joint venture standpoint, you know, to move forward, in the months or so, we're going to need some direction from both local boards, because there's going to need to be some...
We know how Louise is going to look.
Yes.
They've already spent, $50 million?
I think they spent close to $50 million on their water line and their water treatment
that
facility.
That has no water in it.
And it could still, the price could still change, just like
Again, with this, so the 39.6, that is a guaranteed maximum price. There is no change orders with that. That is...
So it could come in less.
Mm-hmm. So what would you be looking for from the board?
Well, I mean, again, for this evening, not a whole lot, but I guess just from a discussion standpoint is...
We don't have a choice, though.
Yeah.
I mean, right.
There is no discussion because there is no choice.
Mm-hmm. We have to move.
I mean, you can't, if you said we're not going to do our part, mm-hmm. Louise is going to sue us. Mm-hmm. So there is no choice. I mean,
I don't know that. I mean, the thing that I know for certain is this project was to be Fluvanna County and Louisa County's long-term water supply.
I think it's in our JOWA agreement. I don't think we can back out of the agreement.
Yeah,
Now in Zions Crossroads we have
75,000
gallons available.
Yeah.
So if we're going to grow up there, we have to have more.
Yeah.
And I can't see us digging wells up there. I think they've already tried.
No, there was a Wayne Stevens when he was here. We did hydrogeologic studies for groundwater, and it did not produce good results.
Was not feasible.
So some upcoming things is one, you know, we kind of talked about what we've done so far. You know, we need some direction from the boards to move forward. You know, we're looking at some of these funding aspects of it too. You know, that's certainly a huge app. That's mm-hmm. certainly a huge thing. If we were able to get some type of grant funding, that would certainly change some things and make the lift a lot lighter.
This would be definitely within the grounds of infrastructure.
It is, and I think in this, because we submitted a grant application a year ago, and unfortunately the state was just inundated with applications, and a lot of the applications at that point that got priority were for systems that were failing, really what it is.
This is a failing system. No water. It's failing.
Well, I will say we've had good discussions with some of the VDH reps. I think Mr. Goodwin and myself with Louisa, I think we put together a lot more of a robust application package with some good reasoning behind it.
Louisa's got great reasoning behind it. They got a 10-year-old water line that never hauled water. We had a house that burned down that was on a driveway with a fire hydrant. We could not hook up to.
But I will tell you too, you know, there's besides that, I mean, I think our Fork Union project also, there's a benefit to that because from VDH's standpoint, they just don't want to see, okay, well, you've got this for economic development. They want to know what are the other things from a
revitalization.
From a people standpoint, you know, and from a, again, Fork Union, we got the Fork Union project that this water is needed to feed into that project to get a long-term reliable source. So there's a lot of data pulling in from the grant application showing what type of existing customers and future customers it's going to impact. What are some of the areas that it's going to be going to? I think we had a better grant application and we put a lot more effort into it and we were able to, I think, take some good angles with it and produce solid data. You know, but there's still things, you know, this project, just like we did before, this project's going to have to come back before the board for a special use permit on its current location. And really to kind of keep on a timing standpoint, we would probably want to do that. We would want, the JRWA would have to submit to Fluvanna County a special use permit application probably by September 1. Again, one thing we are looking at, potential, let's just say that we're, let's say all boards say we want to move forward. Hoping to have all the design and everything finished by end of year or early of 2024 to start construction of spring of 2024.
How much of the Dominion money would be, do you have a projection of how much of that money is allocatable to $22 million cost?
So what we did is we, at the time, we had estimated $10 million was going to go, at the time, this was two and a half years ago, that portion was going to be about $10 million towards Fluvanna's portion of the project. So we kind of, again, we had the big $47 million for the project. We allocated about $10 million towards the JRWA project, and we allocated $37 million to the Fork Union water supply improvements. Again, if we don't get water, we can't do Fork Union water supply improvements. Right. So
we don't get that money anyway.
Yes.
Right. So thank goodness we got that money. That's
yep.
And then, so you got the $10 million, you got the $4 million that's already allocated in the fund balance,
yep.
or allocated to the project already.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess that's committed fund balance money. Is that
well, I mean, the $4 million, again, the $4 million existing proceeds comes right off the top of the project because that's a shared.
Right, but that was, is the money in the JRWA's hands, the $4
million? Yes.
And they've got most of that still or whatever?
Yes.
And we don't have anything in committed funds and fund balance towards the JRWA project.
From the Fluvanna? No. It was all in debt proceeds previously, and we're paying an annual debt service payment for those debt proceeds.
For the $4 million.
Well, it was originally a $7-8 million debt issuance.
Right.
And we ended up getting proceeds above that for the project. I think it was right around 8.5 million or so, 8.5, 9 million.
Yeah, we spent the 4 million.
And so it's 4 million's been spent. Again, there was a lot of.
So this is above the. So there's the 4 million left.
Yes.
That we've already spent four million. So there's already been 8 million spent. So the real total net cost of the project is closer to $53 million.
Yes.
We'll take 4 million off of that 45, right?
No, it's not spent yet. But I'm saying it's in that 4 million already.
Yeah, if you're saying what the proceeds we took out and you add that to the 45 million,
oh, I see
yes.
what you're saying. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Instead of 53, it's 49.
49, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Your math is always better.
don't ask me to say words. Captain already put me in harm's way. Got my brain strained.
So, I mean, again, no formal actions. This is just to kind of one, at least, I know this is...
Good update. You know,
well, it's a shell shock. It's a big number.
I mean,
it's a big number for certain. And again, when we talked about this, when we gave the update, December 2022, again, we were looking at 35 to 40 million. Now we're 40 to potentially 45 million.
Well, so. one thing that will come off of this for us because of this new route, we're no longer going to have to come up Route 6 and cross under the Rivanna again.
Correct.
Because that would have been a $15 million project right there. So that's $15 million that we can take off. Or I'd say maybe not 15, but 11.
Yeah, I don't know what the cost would have been.
Under the river is the most, I remember that part. Yeah. Going under the river is the most important, the most expensive part.
Yeah, important. If you, there's a... There's a cost somewhere to, I want to say it was a river.
Rock blasting or removing, no.
So if all of this is, eventually can go, when will the water
31?
Be running?
Yeah, Rivanna River crossing open cut is about $1 million. That's just to cut.
Okay.
That's just to cut the river.
Right. So we will still have to come up with between $8 to $10 million in funds.
Potentially, if we don't get the grant.
If we don't get the grant. We get the grant.
And so that'll be some discussion with the board, what that looks like if we don't get the grant, and if the board says we're going to move forward.
If we get the grant, then the $10 million that was allocated from Dominion would not be allocated. We couldn't reallocate that anywhere else.
No, because in the proffer agreement, there was something in there regarding the James River Water Authority project that if there was external grant funds that were applied to the JRWA project, the money that was allocated towards that would...
Yeah.
You couldn't reallocate it to something else.
You would go back to Dominion.
If memory serves me correct, when there was a discussion of us not moving forward with the JRWA agreement was already signed, and Mr. Payne advised us that we could not back out of it. So, almost 100% certain of that.
Well, like I said, I'm catching Dan up to speed on a lot of the JRWA stuff, and so.
Like I said, it has bad points, it has good points, and
it is what it is. I'm not.
We got to move forward with that.
No, it's just planning for additional expense.
Like I said, if we get the grant money, great. If we don't get the grant money, that additional money was money we were going to have to spend anyway.
Right. But I mean, we have a target number of maybe $8 million,
And I'll bet you it would have cost $8 million to go from Primo Road to go under the river and get down there, at least 6 or 7.
So once again next week, Louisa's board will get the same type of presentation. We're out to talk about the cost of the JRWA, and so I'm sure I will be coming back to the board soon with some type of decision points on this. But again, I wanted to just present the material first, let it sink in, and like I said, I'm sure there will be questions.
You know, it's expensive.
Again, we've got good progress and we've got good movement moving forward on it. It's expensive.
Yeah,
and it would seem that we would want then your thoughts, since it's come up several times, on the legalities of if we didn't fulfill our side of it.
Yeah, I'm not attending the next meeting of the JRWA, and also I've been talking to their legal counsel, kind of catch up to speed on
basically how they agree, where we are. Talking to Brendan Hefty, legal counsel.
And Fred's, at that time, Fred's opinion was that if we did not participate, if we reneged on the agreement at that point in time, not only would Louisa win, they could collect the money from us and they could deny us access to any of the water. So it was a double whammy. You got nothing and you still paid.
Right. And this went back to before Mr. O'Brien and I were on the board, when the decision was made to move from Bremo to Columbia.
It was a good decision. It's just we had things happen in between. You know, you have the Monacan Nation, you have other things happen. So
it is what it is.
It is what it is.
I can go back further than that. Was no deal.
I'm sorry, Ms. Booker.
I said I can go back further than that. That we missed a great opportunity in the 90s.
With the $1 railroad acquisition?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When that water was coming out of the James, because Jerome was on the board, they worked very hard to get the prison in Falk Union and had the water coming. It would have been in Falk Union. In 1997, that's when he got off the board because they put it in a referendum and the referendum failed. So he said, well.
All right.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Any questions? I think we are. What we have to do?
Of course, we watered it down.
We have to do
the essentials.
Okay. Let me go on. Consent agenda. Okay, minutes of July the 5th, 2023. Gale Blue Ridge Area Food Bank Partner Impact and Innovation Grant. Would anyone like to speak to K or L? If not, can I have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So made.
Second.
All right. Mr. Sheridan made the motion to accept the consent agenda, and Mr. O'Brien seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
And Chair votes aye. Do we have any unfinished business?
Can I just bring up two really quick points?
Yes.
One, and this is just kind of more knowledge for Caitlin. Caitlin gave you all the VACO things, so she's just looking for headcounts for who wants to go to VACO, the VACO conference. So if you can, I'm not sure.
I'll be going.
Yeah, I filled mine out.
Okay.
I guess the real question was what, banquet or no banquet, right?
Yeah, Mr. Fairchild, you said yes. You said yes. Yes.
I think that since it's my last, I should not go. I don't need to spend that money to go. What do you use the bank on?
Okay. All right. So that's three. That's three. Yeah. Three board members. Okay.
Why should I go?
Then you'll be honored.
And then one other quick thing. So at the last board meeting, there was an agenda item where the board gave me some flexibility with the J.P. Morgan proceeds to go up to $900,000. Well, we had a couple extra projects that were being delayed, like the lighting project. And so we talked to J.P. Morgan, and they're giving us a six-month extension. The money we had to spend by August 3rd, which is tomorrow. So they're giving us a six-month extension. That doesn't necessarily change a lot of things. We're still going to have to swap around some projects because, again, like a lot of the fire rescue apparatus. But instead of giving me the latitude to just swap them out, I'm going to come back to the board with some formal recommendations on what we need to swap out because, again, there's still some fire rescue apparatus that's not going to be done in time by that, even that extension. So. Just wanted to give the board an update on that, and that's all I have.
Okay, good. Thank you.
There was something I was going to say.
Any new business?
Out of my head.
Any new business? Now I will open the second public comment. Anyone would like to speak to the board? Come to the lectern, give your name and address, and talk to the board. I don't see anyone, so I'm going to close and public comments.
Madam Chair, I move the Nevada County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, county administrator performance, prospective industry, prospective business update,
investment of funds, JRWA project, legal matters, Department of Emergency Services.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
Motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mrs. Speaker. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now in closed.
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from an open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-37A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second.
All right, we have a motion to come out of closed session. Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
No.
Roll call.
Roll call.
Okay, roll call. Mr. Chris Fairchild.
Aye.
Ms. Patricia Peter.
Aye.
Mr. Tony O'Brien.
Aye.
Mr. Mike Sheridan.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
No, we got a motion to extend the meeting.
Okay.
Motion to second.
We have a motion to extend the meeting until 10 and second by Mr. Brown. All in favor? Chair votes aye. Now we can adjourn. Mr. O'Brien, motion to adjourn. We have second. Second, Mr.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, chair votes aye.
Amen.